They'll teach you history, but they'll teach you what they want you to think is American history.
For us as a people to take that off, they put it on us, they put this yoke on us, and none of it has ever been true.
Because it was made a thing, things were done, and now wounds have to be healed.
Women cut their hair really short, but I'm sure they would have done something beautiful with that.
You're sure that they would have?
I'm sure.
This is Shay, a good guy, and I am being black on Earth.
Tell you a story. This is true. I'm not going to use any names, but I was away and I came back and she told me she had been raped, but she handled the situation of the rape in the most extraordinary way. But my immediate reaction was, I asked, did she know who it was? No. What color were they? She said it was a black person. I went up and down areas with a cosh, hoping I'd be approached by somebody. I'm ashamed to say that. And I did it for maybe a week, hoping some black would come out of a pub and have a go at me about something, you know, so that I could kill him.
Whoa. That's what happens when a nigga shows up. So if that kid hands out the pass and he beats the shit out of you, now they want to kill a nigga, right? Now, obviously, in Liam Neeson's case, it was much worse than that. His girl was raped. So he felt like he needed to go out with a kosh. A kosh does not sound like a threatening weapon to me. It sounds like a pillow. He sounds like he was going to go kill somebody with a pillow. But I had to look up a kosh, and apparently it's like a blackjack or something like that, you know? And I guess you'd kill somebody with that? You would have to really have a lot of energy to kill somebody with a kosh. He didn't go out with a knife. He was looking to work out once. He was about to give somebody that work. He wanted to put some sweat in and beat this black bastard. It beeped it out, but he says black bastard in there. So Liam Neeson, from now on, will be known as the blockbuster actor who, at one point in his life, spent 10 days hunting black men. Now, he doesn't finish the story. I would love to know. Liam Neeson joined the BBOE audience. Sit right next to Michael Jai White in between Dapper Dan and tell me, did you ever encounter a black man? Did you actually beat a black man, Liam Neeson? Be honest now. Be honest. Did you kill anybody? Liam, Dark Man, Ra's al Ghul? I want to know. He doesn't say. I think that Liam Neeson thought he was telling this story of how he could just be a really base and be in touch with his primal nature, and didn't realize he was actually describing a potential hate crime, a potential murder. I think later on he was like, wait a minute, I said black bastard. But then you see him kissing on, what's the lady's name? I just saw that movie that he was in with, why am I forgetting her name? And she's one of my favorite actresses, ever since I saw her in Solaris. So I don't think that Liam Neeson is a racist, but that was definitely a racist mindset. I mean, that mindset is the mindset that killed Trayvon Martin, right? Except Zimmerman had a gun. You know, that mindset is the mindset that destroyed Greenwood, Oklahoma, destroyed Rosewood. That's the racist mindset. That's the racist mindset that enslaved black people, that keeps us enslaved. That's that mindset. Whether he employs it throughout, I think the difference is that he's not employing it throughout his life. He did it for 10 days, which is 10 days too long. I find it interesting that he asked what color, though. Like, where was he? Because he goes on an interview and says that he grew up in Northern Ireland. But I wonder where he was staying at the time that he asked what color. Because what's she going to say? It's either black or white. So if she would have said white, was he going to go around looking for a white man to kill? Liam, tell me. If she would have said white, what would you have done? I don't think that he would have... If she would have said white... Like, she said black, so he goes just black bastards, like Terminator, right? He went after black bastards. But if she would have said white, I guarantee you, I'm answering for you right now, Liam, that you would have gone from where? Now, depending on where you live, like if you were in London or LA or something like that, You would have wanted to know what neighborhood. I guarantee you. What neighborhood, what town, like what type. You would want to know what type of white. What sub-ethno-whiteness they were. I guarantee you. I guarantee you. He would not have stuck with just any random white guy. Because that wouldn't be satisfying. That wouldn't be satisfying. You'd need to know. Was it the blonde hair, blue eye type of white? Was he red hair? You know what I mean? Because, yeah. They have some racism. If you want to call it racism. Some, like, prejudices within each other. They hate Polish, you know. And you know, some... They don't like each other. Like, you know, within their little subgroups. Trust me. So I guarantee you that... If Liam Neeson is being honest, and I hope you're being honest, Liam Neeson, when I ask you this question, you're gonna call in, you're gonna tweet me and answer this question. If she would have said white, what would you have done? So yeah, that shows you that's the education that, you know, blacks will kind of remain an other, you know, and there would be no, because I guarantee you, like if that happened to a black guy and it would have been like, somebody raped me, what color, and she says white. Man, would a black man go out and try to beat up a bunch? Yeah. I don't think he would go out to kill a random white man. I think that he would go out looking for that particular white man. I think. Depending on who your boyfriend is, though. If she would have said black, he definitely wouldn't go out looking for black men. He would want to know what he looked like. I think that would be the next obvious question. What did he look like? But that's an interesting story. That was very brave, if not stupid, of him to tell that story. I would take that shit to my grave. I'm gonna let y'all know right now. If I'm ever going out to hurt somebody, even if I didn't hurt them, I wouldn't tell anybody. So, yeah, there's that lack of education. There's that mindset that gets people on our case, man. And speaking of that, getting people on our case. Think of that. So Liam Neeson was out hunting black men, right? Now, he, in that moment, was no different than George Zimmerman. He was no different than Roy Bryant. So, you have to imagine that Liam Neeson is sharing the mindset of a George Zimmerman. He's sharing the mindset of a Roy Bryant. He's sharing the mindset of the mob that attacked Greenwood, the mob that attacked Rosewood, and many other black communities over history, the mob that killed Yusuf Hawkins. He's sharing the mindset of said mob. So that shows you that there's an education there, and it also shows you that there's a history there that we should all be aware of. There's a history, and that history is now coming back again. It really didn't go anywhere. It's the same thing like a black renaissance. It sort of inhales, exhales, like a heaving, hibernating monster, you know? Where there's this wave of violence against blacks that sort of goes down, then it comes back up. And this is, I'm talking about external people outside of the black community against blacks. I'm not talking about blacks against each other. And that there's waves in that too, of course. I said that to say, listen to this. This, I found this interesting. This is old. What I'm about to play for you is old, but I find it very interesting. This is, you're about to hear Harry Hoke on CNN with Mark Lamont Hill.
In New York City alone, okay, blacks are 23%. They make up 75% of the population. 75% of all shootings, 70% of all robberies, and 60% of all violent crimes. All right? The whites, only 3%. Now, that is why there were more blacks in jail than there are whites. That's, okay? And now let me just finish here, and then go, all right? So we look at that statistic, all right? They turn it around. You know, the racial demagogues out there turn it around that the blacks are being picked on.
Guys, how do you still on national TV and just say that black people are prone to criminality? I wouldn't be able to respond to that, okay?
Well, they are.
But you think black people are prone to criminality?
The statistics here show this.
You don't mean to say that.
The statistics here show this. I just want to show. So Harry Hoke, if you never saw that video, he's actually on there on this panel. He's got like one sheet of paper in his hand. And he's reading off these statistics on, and actually making the claim then, that blacks are more violent than whites. Whites only 3%. He was very smug when he said that whites only 3%. I'm like, goddamn right, because y'all are resting right now. Y'all ain't have anybody to kill right now. Y'all are chilling right now. I mean, it's so funny to me that he's like, blacks are more violent. They're out here killing all of these people. Because you've done 400 years of murdering, Harry Hoke. 400 years. You're tired right now. You white people are exhausted right now. You know, you're taking a break, you're doing yoga, you're spending time in a coffee shop, you're writing books, you know, you're spending your time inventing shit because you killed and massacred and maimed and waded through rivers of blood already. That was a lot of hard work, man. Take a seat, man. You know, and it's like, oh, 3% now. Okay, all right. Yes, because you're catching your second wind. It'll come back. And let's not forget about the wars that you're still fighting. I mean, come on now. Comparing bloodshed to bloodshed is just very strange to me. And but from that, it's so funny that from that, it's so smug of him that from that he takes this, and you know, he takes away that blacks are more violent. That's where he would go with it. He wouldn't just say like, yeah, there's a lot of violence amongst blacks, but he's just like, blacks are more violent than whites. He makes it into this like competition, like I could piss farther than you. Like, it's just a little bit weird. In that moment, it would be like, blacks are more violent than white. White's only 3%. And then Mark Lamont Hill is like, yeah, but my dick's bigger than yours, nigga. Like, what? But he, you know, I don't use that word, nigga, but I'll probably bleep that up. It's this weird competition that they're trying to uphold, you know, and it's just so funny to me when they make that superlative, when they try to make it into a superlative rather than something that's happening to us. And then he says that's the reason why we're in jail more. If you listen further, let me see, because I think he says it.
I'm going to give you a chance to correct me. You don't mean the black people are prone to criminality.
What does this say?
I don't know what that says, right. But I know.
The chief can back me up because he's coming out.
So he said the chief can back me up. That's interesting. The chief can back him up. So I want you to listen to this since the chief is going to back him up. Listen to this. This is also pretty old. I'm not sure when that video is from the Young Turks. That can't be more than 3 years old. This one that I'm about to play for you now is actually a six-year-old recording that was only released maybe 3 years ago. So notice that he says, the chief will come out right now and back me up. Now, I want you to hear this. And maybe you've heard it already. I think it went viral. Listen to this. This is very... it's interesting, but it's also very angering at the same time. It's not funny. Here we go. Listen to this.
There's mostly teenagers, anywhere between the ages of 15 and 19.
Mostly male, black, and Hispanics.
Okay. Who are you stopping?
Everybody. I stop everybody.
You know what has at this point?
Mm-hmm.
25 was a female, Pat.
Okay. 24. Like I said, I stop everybody. I'm not targeting anybody. First of all,
you just told me who that guy does.
Yeah, I know that, but it also there's also other people who are committing violations as well. I'm not saying that there's not violations being
male blacks. That you commit the crime.
Plenty of people that I write something to too are male blacks and male Hispanics.
Male blacks.
Not for the whole year. And I have you're telling me for the whole year I saw two male blacks for something.
No. January 1st,
August
20th. 54 tags, two male blacks, seven Hispanics, seven other, 10 whites, 3 Asians. So where are you targeting the
person
you
told?
Like I said, if I don't see a perk jumping on the turnstile, what am I supposed to do to him? And I'll say,
these people have to apply.
A female Hispanic that I stopped, and she said they did pop, actually, for a warrant, and I arrested her. Female Hispanic. The Hispanics that were supposed to be going up that are committing the crimes. The people that I do
think that she's
going
to pop.
And I think she's going to pop. I didn't put no thought into it. If you come up and you get in and you come up with a collar, I'm taking you in.
It's like, you described to me who's committing the crimes, you're fully aware of it. We're not targeting those people.
I am. I'm targeting everybody.
You just told me who's committing a crime. You're fully aware of it. You're not targeting those people. Black males. That's what he wants. So it's just kind of funny that Harry Hoke said, you know, blacks commit more crime. He's had a chief come out. That guy is actually I think he's a captain. His name is Konstantin Tsakis. He is an NYPD transit captain. He was recently promoted, or at least cleared for a promotion to be a deputy inspector, even after this recording was released. So you could imagine that a captain might have at least 100 police officers underneath him. So if he's treating all his, he has an army of officers that are going out and they are ordered, commanded to target black boys. And if you heard the statistic, might not have heard it in the beginning, but he asked them who commits a crime in the city. And the officer, his name is actually Michael Birch. And he actually is quoting from the police officer's manual on who commits a crime. He's not saying that off the top of his head from his experience. Maybe he's also saying it from his experience. But there is another recording where you actually hear him say, I know what the manual says. And he repeats what the manual says. And he says, blacks and Hispanics, 15 to 19 males. So you can imagine that they're hunting 15-year-old boys. You see that education there? Now that is, so you heard Liam Neeson say it out of anger and revenge that he went out and was hunting black men. And then you hear a police captain telling his police officers, a hundred of them, to go out and hunt 15-year-old to 19-year-old black and Hispanic boys. That's horrible. They're ruining their lives. And he even says to him, you got mostly females, and these are not gonna pop, meaning they're not gonna come up with a warrant, so you're not gonna be able to arrest them. So you want an arrest. You don't want to just stop somebody. You want an arrest to come out of it. And if the arrest does come up, you want it to come up for a black kid. So you want to take a 15-year-old boy and put him in a cage. That's, you know, and he's telling him who's committing the crimes. The book is telling them, and then he's reminding him and making him feed it back to him. So make no mistake, that's how pre-crime works. The exact same way that Captain Constantine Sakis was acting in that moment toward Birch, that's how that information gets fed. It's like, I'm going to tell you who's committing the most crimes. Here's the book. The most crimes are committed by black and Hispanic teenagers. You give it back. Who did I say commits? Black and Hispanic teenagers. You feed it right back to me. That's how that works. You're just these pre-crime computers are literally automated Constantine Sakis's. It would just be like if I made him into a computer. That's all it is. Extremely biased. You know, but that's what's being spread out about us. That's what Harry Hulk obviously believes, and he's got the paper right there, and he's going to bring the chief out to corroborate. The NYPD chief, I don't remember who the chief was at that time, the actual chief. I think he retired, the one that was from that time. And the commissioner also retired, who was Bill Bratton. And if you go on Hulu, you can look up a documentary called Crime and Punishment. It's written as Crime Plus Punishment. You absolutely have to see it, where it's 12 police officers that are suing in a class action lawsuit the NYPD. You have to see it, because it puts all of that into perspective. That quota system is pre-crime. It's them acting out pre-crime, but analog style. They're just doing it with papers instead, but they're going to automate that, and that's going to be a pre-crime. And instead of those officers, are going to be cameras and drones with facial recognition. And instead of Bill Bratton telling you, or Constantine Sakis telling you, to go hunt black boys, the computer is just going to say, go to zone 145 and look for suspect 312. And he's not going to know, and the officer's not going to know their race or anything like that. They take that data out of it. And you're just told to go here, be in a certain place, and look for so-and-so. And so when people say, hey, that's really racist, because we only see you arresting black boys, they're going to be like, well, I didn't know what race he was. I was just arresting what the computer said. I was just doing what the computer told me to do. Which is funny, because that is like the precursor for, if anyone is into their Bible out there listening to me right now, that's the beast, right? Isn't that the idol that spoke? It's not the exact same prescription for it, but it's pretty much like that. It's this thing telling you to go harm someone else based on what? Its own internal data. These algorithms, you can't see them. You're not sure how they pan out. But that's how that's working, you know. And it's being spread around. I mean, listen to this. Listen to this here too. This is also very interesting. And frightening. It's really frightening at the same time, because this is how pre-crime is going to work. I think it's this one.
That's been one of the driving narratives of this, is that police are indiscriminately just shooting black Americans, and it's black Americans most affected by police shootings. But what the Washington Post shows with their data is that actually that's completely opposite.
Yeah, it's not true at all. There's a study from Harvard University. There's an economist there who's won a bunch of awards named Professor Fryer, and he has come out with the study. And what he found is that actually it's 20% less likely in the same circumstance that police would shoot a black man than a white man. So you're more likely to be shot in the same circumstances if you're white than if you're black. And this was supported last year by Professor Peter Moskos over at John Jay College at City University of New York. So we've known for several years that this is true, that the idea that black people are being disproportionately shot by police, they're being targeted and killed by police, that there's some sort of massacre or genocide of black people by white police officers, that this is absolute nonsense, but that hasn't stopped President...
It's absolute nonsense. So I guess he hasn't heard Constantine Sakis' recording, and he hasn't seen Crime Plus Punishment. Ben Shapiro, I invite you to the BBOE audience. You can have a seat right next to Liam Neeson. And all of you guys need to sit down and watch Crime Plus Punishment, and you need to listen to this recording by Constantine Sakis if you think that it's just absolutely not true that blacks are being hunted by the police officers, because Constantine Sakis, at least, him and his army of cops are definitely hunting black people. And so you notice that he references the study, and they're all referencing studies. There's a bunch of people always study. I'll play another one for you. The whole thing is centered around studies. Let me see here. Oh, well, let's go back to everyone's favorite Larry Elder. He mentions a study.
people. I'm always sympathetic to that. And that, at the same time, I hear you laying out a pretty solid
case.
Well,
these are just the facts. I'll tell you something else, too. There was just a study, University of Washington. And it turns out cops were more reluctant, more hesitant to pull the trigger against a black suspect than a white suspect, probably because of the fear of being accused of racially profiling and the fear that the civil rights establishment was going to come down on him. So if anything, whites are more likely to be shot by a cop under certain circumstances than a black person. And in the last 30 or 40 years, the number of percentage of suspects killed by cops who are black has declined 75%. However, the percentage of whites killed by cops has flatlined.
Yeah.
And so, if anything, people are more concerned about shooting black people for fear that they're going to be called racist. And almost every one of these incidents, whether it's Eric Garner in New York, who died because he was selling Lucy's and resisted arrest, whether it's Tamir Rice in Cleveland, who was twirling around the gun, whether it's Michael Brown in Ferguson, who had just committed an strong-arm robbery, almost every one of these incidents involves somebody resisting arrest. Why don't you just do what the police tell you? My dad said, when I get pulled over, have my hand at 10 o'clock, have my hand at 2 o'clock, say yes, sir, say no, sir, make sure my paperwork is in order, and if I feel the cop is...
Yeah, also, he used the stats and also noticed that every single time it's the black person to blame. It's never case by case. It's like, it's your fault. My dad told me this, you know, why don't you just do it? You're not being obedient. It's us. It's always us. So that's one. He quotes a study. Watch this here.
All right. I want to also play this young woman. This woman obviously so upset, and she, you know, her fear is genuine. She says that she believes that wherever she is, she could get shot, so it's no more dangerous for her to be in the middle of that crowd. You know, how do you respond to that?
Well, her fear isn't real. It's based on emotion, and it's not based on anything factual that she'd be able to articulate. It's just out of control behavior. I'll tell you what she faces danger, where she faces danger. It's being on the street in any American ghetto where the black-on-black crime is a bigger threat and a bigger problem in the black community than the police use of force. So the fact that they continue to focus on this aberration, that is the police use of force, it's an aberration, okay? They have more fear of that than, you know, coming across a gang member or being caught in a crossfire like Dwayne Wade's niece was in the city of Chicago, pushing a baby stroller down the street, for heaven's sakes, with a baby in it, and she took shots to the head from two black longtime career criminals. And so that's why I said it's not based on anything real. It's based on emotion. And if they really took a look at what was going on around him, what they'd be railing against is not the police and the police use of force. The police are down there to protect good law-abiding black people, to protect and serve, but their biggest threat are criminal gangs, and it's other black males who are involved in this crime and violence in numbers that are disproportionate.
Oof, the numbers that are disproportionate to the population. I hate the way that he says black. But one thing I would give Sheriff David Clark is that he's a really good actor. I don't know where they found this dude, but his enunciation and his emphasis on words, man, is extremely powerful. Yeah, and obviously he also hasn't met Constantine Sakas, and he's in law enforcement. You would think that they all know each other. So I invite you. You know what? I'm not inviting you, Sheriff Clark. You rub me the wrong way. You and Larry Elder. I don't want y'all in my audience. Make sure y'all not listening. Here's another stat for you.
Okay, so the truth is, and this is sad to say, but the black crime rate has been significantly higher than the white crime rate for literally 150 years. It's been very high for a very long time. The black murder rate was 10 times the white murder rate in 1900. So this has been true for a very, very long time. And the real question is, why didn't that ratio narrow right after the civil rights movement?
Why the hell does he know that? Why does he know what the murder rate, comparative murder rate was in 1900? Whatever.
Right, because presumably things changed after the civil rights movement. So, and why exactly is it a fact of white privilege when black people kill black people, which is the majority of people who are killing each other, right? The vast majority of black on black, the vast majority of black crime is black on black crime, right? It's not black on white crime. So the idea that it's, you know, and it also doesn't match up with poverty rates. Poverty and crime don't match up as well as people would like them to. The left has been trying to make this argument for a very long time, and it doesn't work. I mean, when you have, for example, poor Asian communities when they came to the United States didn't have anywhere near the level of violence that poor Italian communities did when they came to the United States. It varies by culture, actually. Their culture makes a difference. The reason that I would suggest that there is such high violence rate in the black community is specifically now because you have a culture where there are young black men growing up with no fathers in the home.
Oof.
But the black middle class was growing actually pretty quickly in the 1950s. And then in the 1960s, a couple of different things happened that really trashed the system. One was the welfare system said, unfortunately, to black fathers and black mothers that you are better off if you actually don't stay in the home. You get benefits that increase if the father leaves, right? And then that creates an incentive to single motherhood, which is seriously problematic because the government can't be daddy, right? Only the father can really be daddy. And then, you know, beyond that, there was there is a long history, and this has been maintained. And this is where I will agree that there is quote unquote white privilege, but not
thank you for agreeing.
So it used to be white privilege, and now it's actually a lefty argument. So the white privilege was, and this is true, that white police forces did not police inner city black communities or southern black communities. So when black people killed each other, the white police forces just said, fine, go ahead and kill each other. Like, really, this is true historically. Right, white police forces did not police black communities, so there's a lack of law enforcement in the black community, and so people break down. This is true in any tribal society where you don't have law enforcement or any overarching justice system. Right, so it's not unique to American blacks. This is true wherever there's no real justice system. People tend to take justice into their own hands, and you end up with retaliatory killings all over the place, which is what happened. That was true all the way until the 1960s, and then in the 70s and 80s, when the crime wave really started to hit, right, between 1960 and 1994, the violent crime rate in the United States multiplied by 400%.
Yeah, that was when it was a crack.
And when that happened, there was a real crackdown, right? This is what now brings up Bill Clinton, right? This is what we've been seeing in discussion of this week, Bill and Hillary Clinton. Bill Clinton is right. Well, what he did and he pushed for very strongly was we need better standards of policing in inner city communities and we need more cops, not less cops. Broken windows policing, more cops in inner city communities, and the crime rate starts to drop.
There you go.
So what I would argue is that what you're seeing now in the increase, the new increase in crime, is what you're actually seeing is the impact of the left saying, get those cops out of our communities, they're racist. Mm. Right, in the last couple of years, we've seen the crime stats start to spike again. In really dramatic ways, increasing double digits in murder rates, increasing double digits in cities from St. Louis to Milwaukee to Chicago to New Orleans, largely in black areas, unfortunately. So,
unfortunately.
You know, how much of that, that's the narrative, how much of that you want to call white privilege and how much you don't is up to you. I would say that what's happening now is not white privilege. What I would say is that, you know, Jim Crow created terrible systems of law, and those systems of law allowed cultures to flourish that were violent and problematic. And then that was exacerbated by the federal government getting involved and under policing. And now, when we actually have a situation where the police want to go in and clean things up, now the left has insisted that not happen. So that's not, I don't count that as white privilege.
How does he go from the government, then the left? That's very interesting.
My problem with the term white privilege as a general rule is that it's too vague. What I just laid out for you is a relatively specific narrative with actual cures.
Right? He also doesn't realize that that's not what we mean by white privilege. So
white privilege does suggest that there's some cabal of white people out there saying, I want black people to die. I don't think that's true. Right, I think that there are laws.
Ben Shapiro, meet Constantine Zakas.
That were on the books that are racist. I think there were racists who promoted those laws. I think those laws were basically wiped out in the 60s. I think those racists were basically voted out of office in the 60s.
What? And now Ben Shapiro, meet Ralph Northam.
Seen is the impact of other unintended policies that have created tremendous problems in the black community, but all of which can be solved. All of it. All of which can be solved by individual responsibility.
Ooh, individual responsibility. You can change your culture. You can undo what has been done to you for the past 250 years. You can change your culture. While us, with our white privilege, we carry on. I also found it very interesting that he said that, you know, the dad is not in the home. And that's the reason why there's so much crime, because there's no dad in the home. And we allowed government to be our daddy. But then the answer to that is more policing, which is like a daddy, right? Isn't that the government being, I don't know. And then he also used that. So then he said that, you know, it's because the fathers weren't in the home. But then he also said that the crime rate was still really high amongst blacks for 150 years. So how are they correlating that? And then I think even your boy Larry Elder, he even said, let's see. It's funny how that. So he's saying that it's really that the fathers are missing. But then he still wants, and we can't use the government for dad. But he still wants to use the government for dad in the form of policing. That's okay. Not to mention, he says government can't be daddy when, oh my God, the government was everything. They owned us, right? They were our government. They were our executioner. They were our judge. They were our jury. They pretended to be our gods. So, but not daddy, you know. And then it's so funny that he says that it seems to be that the single parenting is the problem. But then he says that we had our parents in 1950, but we still had problems in 1950. What are they saying? They don't know what they're saying. What they're doing is they're setting us up for pre-crime. Because I think Larry Elder says the same thing. He says it here. Let's find it. Oh, I hate listening to the beginning of it.
The biggest burden that black people have, in my opinion, again, is the percentage of blacks, 75% of them, that are raised without fathers.
And that has
every other social negative consequence connected to it. Crime, not being able to compete economically in the country, being more likely to be arrested, that's the number one problem facing the black community. And when I hear people tell me about systemic racism or unconscious racism, I always say, give me an example, and almost nobody can do it. So the family.
Almost nobody.
I'll follow.
He said, almost nobody. Well, can you just talk about the people who actually did give you an answer?
Well, your logic there on family stuff. What can actually be done about that then? I mean, because that's a big...
Reverse the welfare state. In 1890, 1900, you look at census reports, a black kid, believe it or not, was slightly more likely to be born to a nuclear intact family than a white kid. Even during slavery, black kid was more likely to be born under a roof with his biological mother and biological father than today. What's happened is we launched this so-called war on poverty in the 60s. Where literally Lyndon Johnson sent people knocking on doors. I lived in the 60s, and people knocked on doors, apprising women of their availability to welfare, provided there was no man in the house. And we went from 25% of blacks being born outside of wedlock in 65 to 75% right now. And you look at how much money that we spent on welfare, and the lines are parallel. It was a neutron bomb dropped on this country, not just on the black community, but on people in general.
Wow. So the fair housing was a neutron bomb dropped on the black community. And he mentions how, but not crack. He doesn't mention that crack was a neutron bomb dropped on the black community and the effects of that on us. Interesting enough. Government sanctioned, by the way. And I thought it was interesting how he went back to the 1900s and how they had these intact families. But then his counterpart, Ben Shapiro, would say it didn't matter if you had the intact families because they were still higher crime, 10 times higher than white folk. So that's pretty strange. And notice how him and Ben Shapiro... And I want to say, I've heard, not Thomas Sowell, Walter Williams. No, Thomas Sowell. Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams also do the same thing where they say, they almost make this suggestion that we were better off when in Jim Crow and in slavery. Notice how they keep doing that. They keep sort of putting that out there, that blacks were better off under Jim Crow and under slavery. Which is funny because they're making the same argument, the same statement that Cliven Bundy made. Right? He said, we have to ask ourselves if the blacks weren't better off under slavery. Cliven Bundy said that. So here it is, you have four black men making, and Ben Shapiro, one Jewish guy, making that statement to you, sort of bringing back this idea, keep saying it, slavery, 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 because that's what pre-crime will be. It will be a draconian drive to herd black people. It will expedite gentrification, the process of gentrification, and it will herd black people into, with the already essentially in slavery right now, with the way that the prison to pipeline system is working and all of that stuff. What you have, and if you think that Konstantin Tsakis is an anomaly, a one off, him and his army, and now he's been promoted. If he had 100 people under him, he's probably got twice as many people under him now. If you think that he is an anomaly, and then he also has the support of his commissioner, Bill Bratton, and his chief, who've got thousands of officers underneath them. If you think that they're an anomaly, then you are sadly mistaken. So, you know, I've been going on for a long time now. Let me give you the study that Ben Shapiro mentions when he was talking to Dana Loesch from NRA TV.